Welcome to the Business of Government Hour, a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. The Business of Government Hour is produced by the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which was created in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. And now, the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, a conversation with authors. I'm Michael Keegan, your host and managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. For over 15 years, the IBM Center for the Business of Government has sought to connect research to practice, sponsoring third-party research on a broad range of public management issues facing us today. Participatory budgeting, an innovation in direct citizen participation in government decision-making, began 25 years ago in a town in Brazil. It has since been adopted by 1,000 other cities worldwide and by some U.S. cities as well. Proponents posit that participatory budgeting offers promise in improving citizen engagement, but critics claim that the participation rates are not high enough to be of any value and may actually undermine the broader public interest. But what is participatory budgeting? How does it work in practice? And how can social media platforms inform it? Today, we'll explore these questions and so much more with Victoria Gordon, author of the IBM Center report, Participatory Budgeting, 10 Actions to Engage Citizens Via Social Media. Victoria, welcome to the show. It's great to have you.
Thank you so much for the opportunity to speak to you today.
Victoria, would you define and describe the participatory budgeting process, and what are the benefits and outcomes of pursuing this type of budgeting?
Sure. Participatory budgeting is a form of participatory governance. And I really like, for example, Rahm Emanuel, the mayor of Chicago's definition. He says that it's really the management of public funds through the engagement of citizens, and the process involves the citizens involved directly in budget-making decisions. So in the United States, it's just beginning to be used in some major cities like part of Chicago, and most generally it's used on a very limited basis for deciding on how to spend parts of neighborhood capital improvement budgets or some kinds of infrastructure projects. It generally gets started with an elected official who asks his or her constituents to join with him or her in the process in terms of formulating projects for consideration, and then there's a deliberation process to narrow down project ideas. Then once projects are prioritized and selected for consideration, then those are placed on a ballot for vote by anyone over age 16 generally in the community. And what's really unique about it is that it's a very binding vote. The elected official commits to whatever the outcomes are. There are many benefits of participatory budgeting. First, it really brings to the forefront a sense of democratic legitimacy. Citizens, I think, are looking for a way to find trust again in their elected officials and learn about how government works on the local level. For the elected officials, the benefit is that they get to hear directly from their constituents and also work directly with them. And of course, tied to those two benefits is that you have one of the sort of more negative aspects in that it's a time-consuming endeavor, but that also brings with it the opportunity for people to get to know each other. And in effect, then, the benefit is that it does create efficiencies in government because people are voting and deciding on projects that they really want. And the participatory budgeting process helps to ensure that the budget process is transparent, which is also another benefit. And so the whole process really leads to a greater sense of community, and I think that's probably the most important benefit.
So would you outline the goals of public participation in local governance?
Absolutely. There are several goals that public participation in local government has. For example, we want to inform citizens, we want to consult with citizens, we want to involve them, we want to collaborate with them. We want to empower the citizens, and participatory budgeting in particular focuses primarily on empowerment because you're placing the final budget decision-making in the hands of citizens, and that decision-making is binding. So most importantly, sort of the outcome from that is that the overarching goal would be to improve government decision making. So you're not putting up something or tearing down something that's not what really the community wants. So it's important to inform and educate citizens and give citizens a chance for their voices to be heard, but it's that goal about improving decision making that's probably the most important one. Another goal is to involve citizens in monitoring the outcomes of the process. So in terms of participatory budgeting, the citizens need to be able to follow the progress on the projects that were voted on. So they can see in sort of in real time how things are managed and implemented. And of course, sometimes it's a very slow process. But when the final project is done, you've improved that level of trust in government and elected officials. And I think that's one of the most important goals for public participation, is that we want to instill that importance of trust in our elected officials again, Michael.
So, Victoria, participatory budgeting has its critics. Would you elaborate on some of the concerns these critics may have as respects this type of budgeting?
Sure. The biggest criticism from the naysayers is that not enough people are involved or choose to participate to make the process have real value. And the point of the critics is that if you have a limited number of people, then you have very narrow viewpoints or only a few people are listened to. But in honest, looking at what actually happens, this is not how the process works. Certainly you want people to come to the table understanding that there are long-term and short-term implications for any project that might be considered. And you certainly have to recognize that elected officials and, you know, paid professional staff are still going to play very key roles in the process. But I would argue that if you're able to get even one person or one group of people involved in local government, especially in the budgetary decision-making process, that had absolutely no inclination to participate or to vote before in local elections, then that really is a significant accomplishment. And I think that critics need to think a little bit more about that kind of benefit to our communities.
Victoria, what are some of the challenges associated with participatory budgeting?
Well, one is to get beyond those critics and those criticisms. That's very important. A second challenge is that the need for citizens, whatever their needs are in terms of participating, we need to think about what those obstacles might be. So, for example, if I'm a single mom with children, I may need childcare provided for, or I may need to have transportation, or maybe I need to go attend a meeting on a Saturday morning when I'm not working, as opposed to an evening meeting where I've had my kids in daycare all day, then I'm, you know, expected to be without them that evening. That's hard to make that choice to be involved. And so you have to think about those things. You have to be cognizant of that when you plan your meetings, when you select the day or the time of the meeting, and locations too. Sometimes it's easier if you can meet people in the place where they are. So if having a meeting in a church is the best way to get people to participate, then you may need to do that. Or if the school is the other location where people congregate, then that might be, you know, a place to be. A lot of advertisement and community outreach is done in places like, you know, putting posters up at a bus stop or on public transportation in some way, so that you're seeing, you know, people are seeing information where they are. A third challenge would probably be that, as I mentioned before, it's a time-consuming process. It's not quick. There are many ways to communicate with citizens to make sure that everybody's informed, and you really need to think about those things as you move forward with instituting participatory budgeting in a community.
Would you tell us more about the White House Conference on Participatory Budgeting? Why is the White House interested in this effort?
They are. My insights are from the local interviews that I conducted. And what's very interesting to me is that many of the people that I interviewed actually were invited to the White House and did participate in that forum. My very limited understanding of this is that the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy actually hosted the event that focused on two issues of participatory budgeting, and this was in May of this year, Their focus was, one, to try to understand how researchers could help others understand what participatory budgeting is and how it's working. And the second focus was on how technology could broaden the impact of participatory budgeting within communities. So they invited groups of community members and people that are active in participatory budgeting in their own communities to the White House, and they gathered. And in terms of why they're interested, my understanding is that the White House views participatory budgeting as a way to help local governments manage resources more effectively, which is, of course, what we, you know, all want to see anyway. So I think we must really applaud the White House for seeing the value in this and hopefully bringing, you know, more national attention to this.
Given your research, why is participatory budgeting gaining momentum, and to what extent is it expanding into other areas?
I think the short answer is that participatory budgeting is gaining momentum because there are so many big problems in the world today that people don't feel that they can change or have a significant impact on changing. But within local communities, people see that they can have a voice and they can actually make a difference. Even if they come to the table with a particular idea or project in mind, and even if their, you know, pet project or what they wanted to see done doesn't get approved, the process, I think, still instills a sense of hope and satisfaction in people that when, you know, when a project does come to completion in their neighborhood, they can look to that and say, I had a part in that process and I was instrumental in helping to get that done, whether that's, you know, a playground or whatever it might be. Participatory budgeting is also expanding into school districts, housing authorities, universities. It's expanding into other wards in the cities that have, you know, already started, and in terms of other wards in Chicago and in St. Louis. And it's also expanding into some state agencies. Again, on a limited basis, maybe by, you know, one department looking at one aspect of their budget. And I have had, in recent days, more than one call asking whether I see participatory budgeting as being used in a university setting. And I certainly can see the relevance there because, you know, university budgets are generally large too, but they've also had some significant cuts in the past several years. And so if you can bring people to the table and talk about what priorities are, what can make things easier for people to do their jobs, I think this has a lot of relevance.
Victoria, if you are a government executive and you want to pursue this type of budgeting, then how do you pitch this participatory budgeting so you attract interest?
Well, first, you have to be in a position that you can actually commit part of your budget to the process. So in some communities, in local governments, for example, where elected officials often are given a discretionary budget, often to be used for infrastructure projects, for example, they have to commit to make that part of the, you know, funding of participatory budgeting. So you've got to commit to that. And then next, you've got to educate yourself and your citizens, your other elected officials. If you are you know, an alderman and you need to have the endorsement of your mayor or of your city manager, then you've got to educate those people as well. I think it's important that you invite people from communities who are already using participatory budgeting to come and present what their experience has been so that you don't have to reinvent the wheel. I think you also, as I mentioned before, have to go where people are. So if community organizations are important, then you need to reach out to them, to nonprofits, churches, schools, whoever in your neighborhood has direct access to your citizens. That's where you've got to educate and inform.
How would that government executive deal with resistance? What resources do they need, and what will the community really get out of this process?
I think that resistance can be best counteracted by making sure that the community knows that you're sincere and that you're going to do, you know, what you say, and that you're meaning it when you say that every project is going to be considered, maybe not funded, but considered. And that's, I think, very important so that everyone knows that their ideas are valued. You also have to be, you know, as that government executive, you have to be patient. You have to wait for people to sort of catch up with you on some of the ideas that you've already taken for granted that, hey, this is going to work in my community. It can't be a top-down approach. It has to be, very much two-way communication between the citizens and elected officials. So you have to be patient and do a lot of planning up front to, address any obstacles that you might see. And then in terms of the value, again, I think it goes back to instilling a sense of trust and ensuring that your community feels that they're being listened to and that their needs are being met as best they can by elected officials that are really listening to them. So I think that's probably the most important thing.
How does participatory budgeting work in practice? We'll explore this question and so much more on our special edition of the Business of Government Hour, A Conversation with Authors, returns.